Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is probably most well-known nationally as the mayor who went rogue and ordered the San Francisco County Clerk to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples for a few short weeks back in 2004. He's now the Lieutenant Governor of California, and he has a new book called Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government, which he wrote with Lisa Dickey. Gavin Newsom, an honor to have you here. Hello, welcome to New York and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. And let me just say, I'm so pleased you're going to have The Invisible War on tomorrow. My wife was one of the producers of The Invisible War, and I'm very proud of her and proud of that film, making a real impact, indelible impact on the lives of women and men in the military. So I'm looking forward to that.
So that's one election you're completely biased on. It's who wins the best documentary Oscar, right?
That's an understatement. I'll actually be down there for the first time. So I look forward to the red carpet at the Oscars.
Now, is the title of the book Citizenville really a reference to the Facebook game Farmville?
Yeah, Zynga has inspired me, a San Francisco-based company. Mark Pincus is an old friend of mine who started Farmville. And the whole idea of the gamification of the world, you know, 500 million people on the planet are spending more than an hour a day online playing a game. If you're under the age of 21, it's more likely that you spent time playing games than spend time in the classroom between 6th and 12th grade. So the world we're living in is changing dramatically, and games and online participation is by definition the big game changer.
And you write, something's obviously broken when the only way people know how to get their government's attention is by camping in downtown squares, marching and protesting. We were just talking about Egypt, screaming at those in charge. But really, I would think it would be four big public protests.
I love
in
big
the name
public
of change.
Well, I mean, we talk about the Facebook youth of Tahrir Square 2 years ago and the impact they had. And we're certainly seeing that here in the Occupy movement, the Tea Party, two sides of perhaps the same coin.
The online has to go face to face to have an impact. Right?
Yeah, so you go offline and you meet, or rather, you go online to meet offline and meetups and the like. It has to translate. And so, but here's an interesting way of looking at it. You know, government as we have it today acts more like a vending machine. You put in your dollar, you get police, fire, healthcare, education, defense, and if you don't like what you get, you shake the machine. And that's the Tea Party. That's the Occupy movement. It's a framework of scarcity, of limitation. To the new idea and the new foundational principle I'm trying to advance in this book, Citizenville, is government as a platform where you look at third party, the rest of us, private sector, citizens, to once again be co-producers and co-creators in the lives of their city, the state, and the nation, the world we're trying to build.
So government 2.0, as you call it, would be defined by five themes. I'm just going to list them so our listeners know where you're coming from. One, government has to be absolutely transparent. Two, we must encourage people to use that data to create useful apps and other tools. Three, we must learn to engage people on their own terms. Four, we need to allow people to bypass government. And five, we must inject more innovative entrepreneurial mindsets into government.
You know, Brian, wasn't that long ago when this guy, Biz Stone and Evan Williams, came to visit me in the mayor's office in San Francisco. I'd never heard of these two guys. And they had a company called Twitter, which, you know, truly, I think at the time we joked was a sound. We didn't even know what it was. You think about Twitter, you know, 6-7 years ago, it barely existed as we know it today. The cloud famously was in the sky. 4G was a parking space. LinkedIn, a prison. These things are ubiquitous in our lives. They didn't exist as we know them today. The world is changing. All these digital natives, not digital immigrants like me, that are learning the language of technology where it's intuitive. You can't educate our kids like we were educated. This notion of mass education, of standardizing things, it's all customized. That world is colliding now with government and the hierarchy of government, which is no longer relevant to the lives that people are engaging in and day out. So transparency is a core construct, and frankly, it goes deep into the debate on the drones this last week, is that lack of transparency leads to nothing more than this or less, a lack of trust. What else aren't you telling us? What else are you hiding, obfuscating? And that ultimately inures to less participation and a bigger disconnect.
Are you a WikiLeaks fan?
You know, I in some ways, it's a natural evolution of this world we're living in. I mean, the fact is we're living in a fishbowl society. We're living in a glass neighborhood. What we do in private ultimately will be made public. And so in some ways, you know, it's either on your terms or it's going to be on someone else's terms. And that's what the president has certainly discovered this last week.
Listeners, you want to call up and talk to Gavin Newsom, the current Lieutenant Governor of California, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, here in New York to talk about his new book, Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government. But you can also bring up things he did as mayor of San Francisco, which made him famous, or things going on in California right now, if you're into those politics, or 212-433-WNYC for whatever you want to raise. Do you think, though, that people want to collaborate with government? Don't most people just want it to work? We vote, we send you politicians to office, and we want you to just take care of it, right?
I don't think that, and I think it's one of the reasons people are so disgusted by politics, is it's this broadcast model. You know, we turn on your voice during the election. We love you during the election, don't you, politicians? We send emails, we send tweets, we get you to show up and volunteer, we get you to show up on election day to write checks. But once the election's over, we turn off those voices. They're no longer amplified. It becomes a broadcast model. You vote, I decide. And you think about the media industry generally, that no longer is valid. You think about the music industry, that's no longer valid. We're seeing the contours of a whole new change as hierarchy becomes flattened. Small is getting big. Think Tahrir Square again. Big is getting small. It's side by side, peer to peer, people co-collaborating, people connecting in a much more programmatic, a much more engaged way with this network intelligence that technology provides. And I think people will expect more and demand more from government now more than ever because of these tools of technology.
So it's very forward-looking. It definitely connects with netizens, many of whom listen to this show. But how about in the real world? For example, you and Governor Brown just led a huge fight on taxes and education spending that culminated in November with a tax hike on wealthy Californians intended, among other things, to save the University of California system.
Yeah.
Tell me if you think I mischaracterized that. But were you able to use this government 2.0 model in that fight?
No, well, again, that's more of the campaign mindset. And so certainly we were able to generate, particularly interestingly, with online registration. California was, you know, we're not necessarily in the vanguard in this respect, but we finally adopted online registration right before the registration deadline closed. And we had hundreds of thousands of young folks that registered near the end of that campaign that became profoundly significant in supporting Prop 30 and that tax increase, as you noted. But again, my issue is less on campaigns. I think we do a decent job, relatively speaking, using technologies to campaign. We just don't continue to have the conversation. It's a one-way conversation after we get elected. We try to have a two-way conversation during the election, and that's what's ultimately missing.
Let me bring up some other things in the news while you're here. Democratic legislators in your state also just laid out a big gun control package, which looks a lot like the one Governor Cuomo just signed into law here in New York. You were mayor of San Francisco while Governor Jerry Brown was the mayor of Oakland. Oakland is a city with rising gun violence right now, unlike New York. As the country debates what to do about gun violence and how urban gun violence is so intractable, what do you say, having been the mayor of a major American city?
Well, as a mayor of a city with some of the most aggressive gun control measures in the United States, I became literally a target. Mayor Daley and I, notably of Chicago, former mayor of Chicago myself, were on the short list of the NRA's, what I would perceive, I call basically hit list of sorts. I mean, I don't mean to say that in a pejorative sense, but truly. That said,
maybe not the best choice
not
of
the
words
right, but,
in
you
this
know,
case.
It felt like that at times, though. Their tactics and some of their, you know, it's, you know, some folks out there that, you know, tend to take things a little too far, and I won't bore you with examples. That said, San Francisco is among the lowest homicide rates when I left in any time in its history. And there's some of this notion now coming from the far right that, well, Chicago has tight gun control laws, but look, the homicides are up. There's no correlation necessarily there. California has long had the most aggressive gun control laws in the nation until Governor Cuomo took it the next step, as will be the case in a competitive environment. Some California Democratic legislatures want to take it a little bit further than Andrew did. And I think it's a healthy thing. We have mayors from northern part of the state, southern part of the state, supporting that package of additional gun measures, and I think it's long overdue. That said, we've got to nationalize it, because you can take an AK-47 from Reno, Nevada, right over the border into Lake Tahoe within just a few mile drive, and that's ultimately going to be the great challenge the president has.
Put on your headphones. You can hear some callers. Bob in Rego Park, Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Ryan, how you doing, guy? My question is this. First of all, I love what your guest is saying. I wish he'd run for the mayor of New York City. My question is this. You know, you guys have got an initiative, raised billions of dollars, increased taxes, solving all your problems. Mayor Bloomberg absolutely refuses to increase taxes on the wealthy in New York. The legislation refuses to raise taxes in Regal Park, where our library is closed most of the time. It's outrageous. What would you do to suggest to the politicians in New York State to start listening to the people of the state of New York?
Bob, thank you very much.
Yeah, well,
do you
always
have an agenda for New York politics?
Yeah, always dangerous territory when a politician from out of state comes in and starts prescribing solutions for those of the state he's visiting. Look, I appreciate the constraints that exist in terms of the limitation of choices, particularly in the environment we've been living in the last couple of years. But as we move out of that, I think what we need to do is adopt a different framework of governance than we've seen in the past. As I said, big is getting small. Small is getting big. This notion of inside-out government is being replaced with outside-in. We need to engage the citizens to start designing services, designing solutions in their image, and again, move away from this vending machine approach. On the issue of taxation, you know, it's an interesting fact. In California, about two-thirds of our budget challenge was dealt with cuts. That last third, we just could not, as you said, Brian, justify further cuts to the UC board. We could not do the same thing, the California State University. But we did make, this is not something to be proud of, $2 billion of higher education cuts in the last 18 months in California. You've seen tuition double in the last 5 years, triple in the last 10. There's a certain point where you have to say enough. As the caller said, those libraries are important. They're community centers. They're not just places to check out a book. What are your priorities? What do you value? And at what point do you make the decision? We have to ask the voters for more revenue.
Another thing that we're debating in New York, and I think you have in San Francisco, is a paid sick leave law. Very contentious here. And another one of those issues in the mayoral race. Is it working there?
Yes. And not only, look, we have the highest minimum wage in the nation. We have the only city with paid sick leave. I was very proud as mayor to have the only universal health care plan that we fully implemented in San Francisco. We don't need to wait for Obamacare. And we have a vibrant, growing economy. You can do both. It's not one at the risk of the other. You can do both. And I think cities like San Francisco are proving that.
Has the business community in San Francisco come to accept paid sick leave, or they still protest that it's really hurting their bottom line?
I'm one of those business people. I have close to 1,000 employees. It's interesting. My background comes from the private sector. I've got 15 small businesses, and we've certainly adopted. We adopted the minimum wage, which is indexed now over $10. We adapted to strategies on the universal health care. And not only did the business community ultimately embrace it, but more important than anything else, the public that respects those values, that cherishes those values, and understands that they want to participate in a city where we're focused not just on the haves, but we're connecting the dots to everybody else.
My guest on WNYC is Gavin Newsom, the Lieutenant Governor of California, former mayor of San Francisco, author now of Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government, 212-433-WNYC. And Todd in Manhattan, born in San Francisco, he says. Hi, Todd.
Good morning. I'm Todd. I was born in East Bay. I have a job here now in New York. I left, Mr. Newsom, I left San Francisco because your policies have been a total failure. The taxes have been too high. The minimum wage is irrelevant because you can always hire an illegal alien for less than $9.25 and never suffer the consequences. Thanks to you and Andrew Cuomo, it's an example of how national gun policy is going to be defeated because, people say the common sense, people like you and Cuomo and all the other gun grabbers, there is no common sense. It's a slippery slope, like the NRA says. You demonstrated that. And
Todd, why did you wind up in New York, of all places, if you were fleeing liberal San Francisco?
Because I was a tech worker, and my boss came to New York. And now they're moving to Texas, which is a better state to do business. And, San Francisco is one of the most expensive places to live.
And, Todd, I'm going to leave it there. and I appreciate your points.
Yeah, no, I get Todd's points, but the facts bear a different story. San Francisco's recovery has been disproportionately better than most other parts of the state of California. We have an innovation economy. We're talking about the next economy. Remember, San Francisco is the birthplace of life science and biotech. We're on the leading and cutting edge as it relates to research at the UCSF. And we certainly have a different framework as it relates to progressive social values, not least of which what we started with on the issue of marriage equality. Good people can disagree. We're not gun grabbers. That's just hyperbole with respect. There's been no assertion. There's been assertions. There's no evidence to back that up. I appreciate a slippery slope, but having the same weapons of war that are being used in Iraq on the streets of New York or San Francisco, I think it's a fair game to have a conversation about that.
He mentioned immigration, how easy it is to hire a low-cost person who's here illegally in California. Much more impact, I think, in California than in New York, even though we have a lot of immigrants here, too, with respect to the national immigration reform debate taking place right now.
Long overdue. I mean, you know, it's interesting. Because of the failure of the federal government, and this goes back decades, cities like New York and San Francisco established very controversially what we call sanctuary cities. Republican administrations here, Democratic administrations out west, in essence creating localized immigration policy because of that failure. I am all for comprehensive immigration reform, and certainly is the case in technology, which former speaker, the caller is in that world, the incredible importance we should place on high-skilled workers and beginning to address the H-1B visa issue and other startup visa issues, which are incredibly important, particularly out in Silicon Valley.
Is the large number of people here illegally in California not pushing down wages, especially for low-income people born here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's plenty of studies on all sides of this issue. And at the end of the day, the CBO just came out with a report on comprehensive national immigration reform that shows it a huge net benefit economically to this country to finally reconcile the reality of 11 million people living in the shadows.
We have about 30 seconds left. Anything you'd like to hear from President Obama in the State of the Union address? And now that you've been mayor of San Francisco and lieutenant governor of California presently, what might be next for you?
Well, I think, look, issues that define, I think, will define our future are the issues of debt and entitlement, energy and climate change. And the issue that doesn't get talked about as much is this merger from IT and globalization, this hyperconnectivity of the world, no longer connected, as Tom Friedman and others be said, but hyperconnected. And I'd love to see tonight, tomorrow night, the president talk a little bit more about the world we're living in. What are the trend lines that define our current pace, our future, and how do we take advantage of those trends globally? As it relates to my future, enjoying my job as lieutenant governor. I'm having a time of my life putting together a book that I think truly mirrors some of my concerns about where the president's going on IT and globalization.
Gavin Newsom, his book is called Citizenville, How to Take the Town Square Digital and Reinvent Government. We really appreciate you stopping here.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.